There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
So again, good morning to one and all. It is The Agenda, back with you for another week of broadcast here on Dubai 103.8. What's The Agenda all about? Well, it's all about conversation, getting you to pick up the phone and give us a call, 0487155500. What have you been discussing with friends, with colleagues, with family over the weekend? What have been the subjects that have caught your imagination? Do share your thoughts with us now. You can text your thoughts as well. If you don't want to give us a call, you can text on 4001. You can have your say online at any point of the day, or the show at Dubai I1038FM, hashtag DubaiI1038, being updated throughout the day. My name's Tom Urquhart. I'm with you through until midday. Robbie Greenfield's going to be popping in a little later on. The small matter of a few small sporting events to talk about in the second hour of the show. Got the news team on board as well. Sunal's with us, keeping an eye on the roads and also sharing her opinions. A good weekend for you?
Yeah, it was wonderful. You were out watching the match, I'm sure.
How on earth can you tell? I get an excuse because it's my job. I had to take one for the team yesterday in terms of being down. We were live from Barasti, which we do the radio show on a Saturday afternoon there at the Grill. And I've never, ever, ever seen that place as busy it was yesterday. It was extraordinary. Extraordinary scenes down there. Extraordinary scenes worldwide as well, as people tuned in for two. Extraordinary, that's the third time I've used the word already in the show. Quarterfinals really lived up to the hype. I mean, the England match for one reason, and then that outrageous game a little later on where Russia came oh so close to continuing their dream story. That's what's happening in the World Cup. As I said, if you'd like to share your comments on all things Football World Cup, then feel free to do so by getting in touch with the show now. But time for us to introduce our special guests into the studio, our paper reviewers this Sunday morning. It is an absolute pleasure to have them with us here in the studio, sharing their thoughts on all the big stories that have caught their eyes. Louise Karim is the Managing Director of Mums at Work. Louise, thanks so much indeed for joining us. Good morning to you.
Pleasure. Good morning.
And we've got Camilla Hassan as well, who is the founder and managing director of Five Little Ducks Baby and Kids Boutique, an entrepreneur here in the region. Camilla, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for inviting me.
We have got Louise and Camilla on board. They are here to share their opinions on some of the big stories that have caught their eye. But tell us a little bit more. I mean, Louise, you've been such a great supporter of the show. You've shared your opinions with us on time and time again on a number of topics. Mums at Work, what do you set out to do with Mums at Work?
Mums at Work is a community for women in the region, not just mums, women, in to empower them and give them opportunity to create a work-life balance. So whether it's flexible work, whether it's an opportunity to return to work after a career break, and we also train them and support them in, you know, areas that they might need development after a break, such as confidence, personal branding, CV writing.
In terms of the market at the moment, obviously things are moving. There's a lot of chat out there at present. You know, there's a lot of people heading away for the summer as well, a time to reflect, I suppose. We've seen the cost of living going up. We've seen the pressure on a number of different sectors. We hear about the cost that people are incurring in a number of different areas. Is that something you're seeing at the moment? What's your sort of outlook of the way things are at the moment in the job sphere and the way they will be after the summer?
We've got a nice steady flow, to be honest. Yeah. We're seeing a lot of businesses sort of look at the way that they employ differently, which is great for us, looking at more flexible options because it's good for business as well as, you know, good for women as well. Things this year have been a lot better than last year, I can safely say, and it's probably the same for Mackenzie Jones, our parent group as well. But it's, you know, it's just taking its time. I'm hoping after summer, it's always a long summer, isn't it, with Ramadan and then you have summer, etc. But yeah, it's moving in the right direction.
We are moving in the right direction. Those are the thoughts from Louise, who's with us here throughout. We've also got Camilla, as I mentioned, founder and managing director of Five Little Ducks. Tell me more.
So we opened a couple of shops about 2 months ago. We've got one in Jumeirah Town Centre and one in Arabian Centre. And we sell everything that a mother needs if she's having a baby. So we sell things from about zero up to about 6 years old. So all your needs from strollers, car seats, bathing, feeding products. And I source products from all around the world. I'm a mum of two myself, and I struggled to find, you know, all the nice things that I wanted. I used to order internationally, constantly. My husband would roll his eyes every time the Aramex man turned up. And I thought, you know what, there's so many mums here that want all these lovely things. Let's bring it to them. So, yeah, that was the kind of founding notion behind Five Little Ducks. And we're about to open in Abu Dhabi as well in a couple of months.
Amazing. And in terms of the retail space out there and the market, as it were, I mean, a very competitive sphere at present as well. But are things good? Is that what's prompted you to set up here?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, people are saying that retail's down at the minute, but, you know, people are always having babies, so it's good news for us. And we've had a really positive response in the first couple of months we've been open. Lots of new customers and, people are really loving the sort of stuff that we're bringing. I think it's because we're unique. We bring exclusive brands. We really source for quality and the best products. So, yeah, it's been really positive.
Well, it's wonderful to have you both with us here this morning on the show. I've got to ask, because I'm sure it's going to crop up in conversation as well. Have you been bitten by the World Cup bug yet?
Yes.
and nearly
divorced as well. My husband is a massive football fan, but he just does it to annoy me and not support England. he's lived here all his life, but originally from India. So he will just cheer for whoever's against England.
Whoever is against. Really? So there was a Swedish supporter yesterday, was there?
Well, he was outnumbered yesterday, so he didn't really have a choice. I did buy my children England tops.
Extraordinary scenes. I mean, not just here as well, where, thousands turned out yesterday. You could really, it was really noticeable, the number of people who were watching the games yesterday. But the scenes that are coming through on social media and on the news channels of the celebrations in the UK yesterday. I mean, I'm from Battersea and very close to Clapham Junction. Clapham Junction came to a standstill last night with the thousands of people out. So that's just getting through to the semi-finals. Imagine if they get through to the finals.
There'll be a lot of sick days, won't there? One of my friends was telling me yesterday there was 5 million people called in sick.
Oh, really?
The previous match.
That's,
I thought that's a very big number, but yeah.
That's amazing, isn't it? I suppose it's a blessing that it's a Sunday over in the UK today. Yeah. So not that problem. But then Wednesday, as you mentioned, another late one for England fans as well. We've got the two semi-finals Tuesday and Wednesday, which is interesting, isn't it? Because you often think about the positive side of the World Cup and people coming together and the spend and the eyeballs and the broadcasting rights. But I suppose the loss of income or loss of trading and the loss of money from sick days must be significant.
Yeah, I would imagine. And also the loss of money, even if people turn up, like, are they really, you know,
yeah,
together?
How proactive are they? Yeah. Your thoughts. Your thoughts appreciated. How did you celebrate the World Cup? I'd love to hear from the Croatians and the Russians out there as well this morning, because you were really put through something of an emotional roller coaster last night. Extraordinary game that went late and deep into penalties as well. So if you'd like to share your thoughts, be you Swedish, English, Croatian, Russian, all of you were involved yesterday, and all those, of course, nationalities that were watching on and supporting teams accordingly. Do share thoughts with us now. We're going to get more from Louise, more from Camilla. We're going to move into our stories in just a few moments' time. Donald Trump is heading to the United Kingdom on his first visit, a working visit, we're told. How will he be greeted? We'll get more on that story in just a few moments. And just a quick reminder as well, the news team are working their socks off at the moment. Why? Because the Thai rescue operation, we understand, is underway. That has been greenlighted. That has been started. Live updates on that one throughout the show, throughout the day, right here on Dubai i103.8. Send your thoughts to us now on 4001.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it on The Agenda with Tom Urquhart, only on Dubai i103.8.
We are in studio with all the team from the ARN News crew. They're keeping an eye on developments over in Thailand. Sona Rupani is part of that team. She's also here in studio with us as well, monitoring the live updates from Reuters and other sources out there at the moment. Do we have any updated news on that one?
Well, as we know, they started the rescue operations, but we've heard that it's going to take up to 10 hours before the first person emerges. So we're definitely keeping an eye on that, and we'll let you know as we hear more.
Do we know what's prompted this? Is it to do with the weather conditions? Because authorities were umming and ahhing as to whether to go ahead with the actual rescue mission itself. Do we know what the green light and the prompt has been on this?
It seems to have been with the weather, I think, because the rain conditions have been so temperamental. I think they realized that the current conditions were sort of the optimal opportunity for success at the moment.
That's one of the big stories of the day, one that we are following here on Dubai Eye 103.8. If you'd like to share your thoughts on it, then please do so now. Let's get into the stories that we are following this morning with Louise and Camilla, both in studio with us, working through those stories. And Louise, I'm going to start with you, with Mr. Donald Trump. Now, he's heading to the United Kingdom a little later on this week, a very full itinerary, we're told, with lots and lots of golf for him a little later on in proceedings. How will he be welcomed in the UK?
Not that warmly by the looks of it. So there's lots of demonstrations with about 100,000 people that are planned predominantly in London, Together Against Trump, I believe it's called. But one that did catch my eye was a sort of quieter protest by a guy called Leo Murray, who has created a 20-foot inflatable Trump baby balloon, which will hover over possibly the houses of parliament. The whole concept behind that was crowdfunded. $6,500 was easily achieved. And the idea behind it is almost ridicule rather than, you know, sort of an aggressive protest. I personally think it's a great example of English humour. There's arguments to and against, some complaining about the amount of money that's been spent on it. It's better than the other options of a more sort of aggressive protest, in my view.
It's going to be interesting, isn't it? Because it's very well documented, this visit. You know, there was chat, wasn't there, Camilla, at the beginning, that it was going to be a presidential visit. Then it was taken down to a state visit. Now it's a working visit as well. The one thing he seems to be very confident of is his meeting with the Queen during his trip, because apparently he has to do that in his role. But also this, I just found it extraordinary, this outpouring of anger towards it. And they got tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of signatures on these petitions to try and prevent him from entering the country in the first place.
Yes, I mean, it actually reminds me of a couple of years ago when the British people decided to name that naval vessel Boaty McBoatface.
Yes.
It's that sense of humour, I think. And rather than, you know, like Louise was saying, a really aggressive protest, it was more of a subtle dig. And of course, you know, this is how the people feel. So unfortunately, you know, it's been paid for, it's been crowdfunded.
We were told, or we read over the weekend, that, you know, he'd had a directive from his security personnel and his security staff, and from the UK, to try and avoid built-up areas, so try and avoid spending too much time in London, and apparently much of his itinerary is outside of London as well. I mean, I suppose there is the potential, although we're sort of seeing the funny side of it, there is the potential of violence with something like this.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess the security will be at a top level, and it just seems a bit crazy, really, that he's being whisked around almost in secret for these visits when, you know, if you look at other presidential visits, it's a very public, you know, and lots of documentation in the media and everything like this, whereas on this occasion, it's almost like they're surrendering. They don't want to attract attention.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Plenty of media attention on it, Louise. And obviously, that itinerary has been published now, so we know he's going to spend time down south. And he's spending a lot of time up in Scotland on his golf courses, amongst others as well. And, I mean, let's look at it from a diplomatic point of view. I mean, it would be what a worse situation if he didn't come to the United Kingdom, wouldn't it?
From a diplomatic point of view, yeah, because, you know, especially with Brexit and all that, they're trying to increase relations, I assume, with the US. But sometimes you've got to listen to the people. In my view, you know, we talk about, some people were saying that it was a waste of money to build this balloon, but at the same time, look at the security and the amount of money that's going to be spent on his visit.
Yeah.
I mean, I personally am not a big Trump fan, but
it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. I mean, you can guarantee that the lens of the world's media are going to be on him every single step. So we'll watch on with interest. I believe he touches down on Thursday. Is that right? So now Thursday or Friday, somewhere around that. It's towards the end of the week.
Somewhere around that. And we all know that he doesn't take to public insult very well. So I do wonder, I mean, we'll be watching Twitter as well to see how he responds to it. I can't imagine him keeping quiet about that.
He's not been very friendly towards certain Brits and certain British institutions in the past. He's had a pop at the NHS and knife crime in London, amongst other things as well. So it's going to be interesting to see. And, of course, the new US embassy down in Nine Elms, which he called a disastrous deal and refused to go and open, in fact, back in February of this year. So we watch on with interest and can't wait to see the Trump baby balloons populating the sky above London. Let's get on to another story before we head to the news desk now. Camilla, I turn to you to tell me about this extraordinary story that came out on Thursday night. Now, high school students were getting ready for their summer holidays, and I believe they got the surprise of their life. Is that right?
Yeah, I love this story. Sheikh Mohammed made some surprise phone calls to some Emirati female students to congratulate them on their academic success, which I thought was really brilliant, you know, really promoting young women, you know, academically and encouraging them to further their studies, go to university and obviously achieve beyond that in their careers. So it's a really great message. And, you know, three young ladies, they're all from Ajman and went to high school there, and they got really great grades, and so yeah, just out of the blue he gave them a call and gave them some fatherly encouraging advice.
It's amazing to imagine getting that call, Louise, can't you? And I suppose this is something that's very personal to you as well. Yeah, you deal with qualified women and women that have achieved greatness in their careers to date, but you're also sort of dependent on those that are coming through the academic ranks at the moment.
Of course, yeah, and we want them to understand that they've got that support network there. And you know, Sheikh Mohammed does a very good job of that, as does the UAE government, of pushing, you know, the gender equality, and they've always sort of supported young females. Sheikha Fatima as well, she's always supporting the education of women and girls. So,
and we're seeing those statistics bearing fruit as well, aren't we? I know that, you know, it's often trotted out, isn't it, A-level results and GCSE results back in the UK and other parts of the world, where girls traditionally do much better than boys in terms of grades and grades achieved. And we're seeing that here as well through the school system. So showing that investment from youth that's going to bear fruit in the future.
Yeah, I think that's definitely there. And that's where we come in, and lots of other bodies as well here, that, okay, so the education's great. The education's actually at parity here for male and female, but it's when they drop off the career ladder, which is what we're trying to fix in terms of flexible working, because, yes, they get so far, you get to middle management, we all have kids, and then where do they go?
So those initiatives last week that we saw being talked about, this more flexible working hours, I take the point that this was specifically for government employees and government
presently,
reasons,
yeah.
But the very fact that was mentioned, the very fact that was published, and the very fact that that's being talked about at the moment, again, is that a sort of move in the right direction?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I commented, the National called and asked me to comment on the story, and I had actually not heard about it before, that government employees were being encouraged. There's a law coming in about working from afar, i.e. flexible working, which is fantastic, because that gives opportunities to lots of different people in society that maybe have been prevented working before. For me, it all ties in with the Gender Balance Council and the goals for 2021 of top 25 globally for gender equality. So there's definitely moves in the right direction. Hopefully we'll see that mirrored within the private sector. We see, as I mentioned before, we're seeing a lot more companies get that flexibility, understand that they can get better talent if they give a bit of flexibility. Although on the contra side, you have to understand that it takes a bit of different management. You know, it takes a lot of communication. It takes a lot of management on deliverables rather than presenteeism, which actually is the right way to manage. But it's a bit more effort. And culturally, I think there's a big shift to make within certain cultures. You know, from the UK, it's quite a normal thing to do. But from other cultures, it's not seen as the norm. You know, if you're not sat at your desk, you're not working.
And Camilla, just to get your thoughts on this, I mean, is this e-business something that you're very much invested in at the moment, and the retail market out there at the moment, is that something that's driving this sort of change of face that you don't really need to be 9 to 5 these days?
No, absolutely. Sorry, I'm a mum of two girls, and for me, it's about setting an example that you can achieve a lot. It doesn't have to conform to the 9 till 6 workday. So with my staff, for example, obviously my shop staff have to be in at a certain time, but we work round the clock. And, you know, I might have to do a school pickup, or I might have to, you know, go to my daughter's concert or something. But I do fit that in, and I make the additional hours up later on throughout the day. I mean, if you look at my hours, you know, and you look at my hourly rate in terms of how much hours I put in, it's definitely above and beyond the standard 9 to 6. And I'm trying to encourage an environment where, you know, we're not just checking in at 9 and then clocking off at 6, and we don't look at our phones, we don't look at our emails. You know, we are here to serve the customers around the clock. So I'm on Instagram with my customers at 11:30 at night. I'm messaging, you know, other customers, what car seat shall I choose, or what do you think of this product and that product? People are shopping around the clock. Mums especially are breastfeeding at 3 a.m. They're on their phones and they're deciding which, you know, breastfeeding cover they want to buy. So it's not necessarily in my business anyway, especially in retail and e-commerce, it's not necessarily a 9 to 6 job. You know,
yeah.
I think there's also that second shift, isn't it? The mother's second shift. So I usually stay in the office till about 4, leave, spend some time with the kids, and then as soon as they go to bed, that's it. That's me and my laptop.
Laptop's up and running.
But I do tell my team, because that's when I fire out all my emails, do not answer them because it's not urgent. It's just me doing a download of what's in my head.
Getting rid of the stuff that I need to do before tomorrow. Yeah,
exactly.
Listen, does that ring true with you? If so, we'd love to get your thoughts. Please do get in touch with the show. You can text us now on 4001. Equally, you can have your say online at Dubai i103.fm, or give us a call 04871 5500. 4001 for the text.
It's time to have your say. The Agenda with Tom Urquhart on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Thanks so much indeed for your text messages. Do keep them coming through to us. We're with you through until midday. We've got sport coming your way in the second hour of the show. In the meantime, though, we are dealing with some of the big stories of the day. We are in conversation with Camilla Hassan, the founder and managing director of Five Little Ducks Baby and Kids Boutique here in the region, and Louise Grimm, the managing director of Mums at Work, both in studio with Sonal and myself. And in fact, let's just go back to Sonal, because she's got a work cut out today, because she's trying to keep an eye not just on me and making sure that I go to the news at time and other things, but also developing news, because we do have a live developing news story out there at the moment that is, well, it's really caught the imagination of the world. The world are watching on tenterhooks. What's the latest from Thailand?
Well, we know that the dangerous, and it's been described as a dangerous rescue mission that has begun. They're looking to free the 12 schoolboys who were stuck in a cave, who've been trapped inside that cave for more than 2 weeks. And so they've begun the operation. There are 13 divers, foreign and international and Thai divers, who are taking part in the mission, and they're bringing two divers will accompany each child to try to bring them out. So it's actually going to take a really long time. It could take up to 10 hours before we see the first child, up to two to four days between all are evacuated. And of course, it's been described as a risky mission, you know, keeping an eye on the water levels that are changing over there as well. I suppose
if ever we needed, sorry to jump in there, but if ever we needed evidence of just how risky it was the sad loss of one of the divers, the rescue divers over the weekend, or one of those, a very experienced former Navy diver who lost his life trying to take relief to oxygen tanks to the boys. I mean, that gives an idea, doesn't it, of just how dangerous this operation is.
Right, exactly. And we're talking about a lot of kids here, some of whom can't swim.
Yeah.
So that's just a start.
Let's get the thoughts of the team, our paper reviewers this morning in studio. Camilla, I mean, it's obviously a story that, as I mentioned, has caught the imagination, caught the eyes of the world. We're just having a look at some of the screens around us at the moment. Obviously, it's breaking news on Sky, amongst others. Reuters keeping a live feed on it as well. And it's also caught the imagination of some of the great entrepreneurs, around, the great philanthropists around the world as well.
Yeah, so Elon Musk, Tesla... Chief, he is offering his support and help to aid these poor Thai boys. So he also has SpaceX and the Boring Company, which is his business, which builds, you know, the boring machinery to build the Hyperloop that he's working on. So he's obviously got a lot of research and technicians that, you know, very skilled in this, and he's coming up with all kinds of crazy solutions to try and get these young boys out.
Good old Elon Musk. You know, it's only Elon Musk that could call a company that does that sort of work a boring company, isn't it? Brilliant.
Yeah. Well, there's ideas from sending in little submarines to a massive inflatable tube. I mean, they're coming up with all sorts, whether it's going in from the top and drilling down to reach these young boys. I mean, one of the tunnels, I believe, is 15 inches at its narrowest point. So, I mean, you can imagine. Yeah, and these kids can't swim, and they've never dived if they've never used, you know, scuba masks. So, it's every parent's worst nightmare. Just imagine they've been in there for 2 weeks. Apparently, their spirits are high and they're actually remarkably, you know, doing okay. But they're getting weaker. The oxygen is getting less. And, you know, the conditions are getting worse. And it's monsoon season.
I appreciate that it is perilous and I appreciate that it is very dangerous. And I don't want to make light of this situation. But I can't help but think, Louise, that there is moments that football coach is probably thinking, can you just leave me in here? Because he is going to face the wrath of parents when he gets out, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm going to say the poor guy, I'm sure, you know, none of it was intentional. It was just a human error. But yeah, he must feel awful. I mean, he's 25 himself, yeah. You know, so he's still a kid himself. But there's poor boys in there that I can't even imagine how you must feel. Like, it's very good to hear that they're in fine spirits. But not being able to swim and then having to go on a sort of deep sea mission.
It's this idea of claustrophobia thing. That's the thing, yeah, that gets me. I mean, the panic of not being able to swim, you know, and a lot of us turn around and go, yeah, but they're going to be given, you know, breathing apparatus and things like that. But what I understand from the cave network, that, as you mentioned, that 15-inch passage is where you have to take all your breathing apparatus off. Mm. Now, that's tough enough for an experienced diver. For a child that can't swim adequately, it must be terrifying.
Must be absolutely terrifying. And also just the condition of the waters themselves, very muddy, yeah, thick, dark, hard to get through, dark, exactly, hard to see. I mean, just in terms of the claustrophobia as well, another thing that came out was just the first question they asked the rescuers is, how long have we been in here? Can you imagine just the stoppage of the passage of time? Completely just in a dark cave.
You've got no idea of being able to work out if it's day or night. Wow.
And their mental health state when they get out, that's another longer term, you know, potential impact.
Share your thoughts with us on this one. We had a lot of people texting in about this, a lot of people calling in about it as well. I suppose the other thing, Louise, to mention about this is that response. I mean, Elon Musk is a very well-known and very wealthy individual. He's throwing his support behind. But the international outpouring of support for this and the fact that divers have flown in from all corners of the globe, organisations have sent their support, whatever they can do, there seems to be a very global approach to getting these boys out.
Yeah, and it's obviously what you'd expect, but it's nice to see, and it's good to see that everyone's supporting, you know, each country as well. I think now it's just crossing fingers, isn't it, and hoping that they get out safely.
We, as I mentioned, will keep an eye on that one. Live updates throughout the day, courtesy of the ARN News team down here at Dubai I-103.8. Louise Karim, I turn to you now for our next story. Let's go down to Saudi Arabia, if we can, because we are very well informed that there is plenty of developments down in Saudi Arabia at the moment. We've seen Saudi women behind the wheels of cars very recently, and a new female initiative down in Saudi Arabia. Tell us more.
Yes, so Saudi Arabia has its first female ambassador from Belgium, who previously was posted here in the UAE, in Abu Dhabi. So Dominique Mnour is the first female ambassador to be resided in Saudi Arabia, which is, I think, showing positive direction. As you mentioned, women are now driving, women are going to sports events, and women are also taking roles that were previously reserved for men. So it's definitely a move in the right direction. She has, however, sort of said, you know, it's not her role to be sort of progressing women in the country, but they're doing that themselves. But she did comment on the UAE, somewhere that she's lived for a number of years, saying that compared to our neighbours, that we seem to be well ahead of the curve in terms of women's empowerment. She mentioned Sheikh Zayed, that always promoted education, like we spoke about before, for women and children, and that Her Highness Sheikh Fatima has really pushed women and children to be educated. And that she believes it's very deep rooted in the region here, which is great to hear from you know, an external sort of party about how the UAE is really pushing everything forward. And she did mention something that is quite true to my heart, that she doesn't like it when other women are talking to other women and not involving the men. Because I go to so many of these sort of conferences and forums and workshops, and it's just women talking to other women about how they're going to make advances. And that's not how it's going to work. We all have to be party to it. We all have to, you know, if there are too many, not too many, but if the majority of men are in leadership positions, then you need that man to be your mentor or your advocate to push you up to the leadership position. If we're just shutting the men out of the room, then we're not getting anywhere. Mm. So it was a very valid point, I thought she meant.
From your perspective as well, and from what you set out to do, from what you're trying to achieve from Mums at Work and gender equality here in the region, and I mean, is what's happening in Saudi Arabia, is that seen as a window of opportunity as well for you and your sphere of influence?
Yeah, I mean, Saudi is a very interesting place, and I do joke with David McKenzie quite a lot that I'm going to second him there to come crack the market. I think in Saudi, and I haven't done that much research, but that we need, I think the needs will be slightly different to here, because a lot of the women there have never worked. So it's going to be more of an apprenticeship. You know, they're educated, but they've never actually been in the workforce. Whereas what we're dealing with here is more women that have worked before but are looking to return to the workplace. So I definitely think there's some support needed in Saudi to make that happen. But I think it'll need a slightly different tact than it would do here. But it's something that, you know, we're quite interested in looking at.
And Camilla, can we expect to see a Five Little Ducks in Riyadh sometime soon?
Yeah, watch this space, definitely. I mean, look, our plans are to grow all over the GCC, and Saudi is a great country for us to be in. The mums over there, they are so well researched in baby products. They love all the limited edition stuff. They're great customers, let's just say. So yeah, we hope to go over there soon.
Which is interesting as well, isn't it? Because as you said, you've got sort of research and statistics to back up that you've got a number of Saudi mums who've been using the services already. We now moved, I suppose, to that point. Why are we not setting up there? Why are we not offering this service much closer to them? The opportunity is apparent upon us at the moment.
The difference with Saudi is that it's huge. It's like Australia. You've got, you know,
geographically huge,
geographically massive country with these big cities dotted around. So there are lots of these women that are in the smaller villages that, you know, that can't get out and, you know, shop like the rest of us. And it's just so big. So if we were to open over there, it would start off within the main, you know, the main cities. But it's just such a huge country. It's difficult.
Give me a little insight, if you can, into your thinking at the moment as a bloke and as a bloke who tries to avoid malls at the best of time as well. It just bamboozles me that everywhere I go there are more malls going up, you know, and you know bigger and better malls and malls that are servicing certain areas around town as well. I mean, are we getting to the, is there still the supply and demand for malls out there at the moment? How is you as an entrepreneur, as a retailer, how do you choose your space?
Okay, so there's different malls for different needs. Sometimes we just want a mall that we can park up outside, pop in and grab whatever we need quickly. So smaller community malls. Then you've got the likes of Dubai Mall, which is actually, it's pretty much a tourist mall. You know, you've got all the attractions, you've got the ice rink, you've got the aquarium and all this stuff. A lot of restaurants, a lot of F&B. So for retail, you have to weigh up whether it's worth being in one of those huge malls. So you have the malls which are for tourists, you have malls which are for residents, you have the malls which are more for eating. So my customer base, I have to look at a mall where a mum actually wants to go and buy all her stuff. Does she want to walk 3 miles through Dubai Mall, forget where she's parked, she's 8 months pregnant and she's lost her parking and carrying heavy bags? Probably not. But it's a great mall to go to if I want to take my kids to the ice rink. So, you know, it very much depends on your needs. So when I'm looking at malls, it very much has to match my customer need and make it easy for them. My town centre shop, it's literally parked downstairs in the basement. Come up the escalator, I'm right in front of you right there, and we'll carry the bags to your car and you've got a nice place to have a coffee and a few other nice shops as well that you can have a browse around. So it really depends, yeah.
Share your mall experiences to me here this morning. You can text them through to us now on 4001. How do you choose your mall? That's a topic for a Sunday morning, isn't it? Do you have your favourites out there? Do you have those that you won't go to? What makes a mall convenient as opposed to otherwise? Please do send your thoughts through to us on 4001. We will talk the weather in just a few moments' time. If you got stuck in some of the adverse weather conditions over the weekend, share your stories, share your pictures with us now. Get in touch with the show. You're listening to The Agenda. We're broadcasting live right here on Dubai i103.8.
It's time to have your say. The Agenda with Tom Urquhart on Dubai i103.8.
Take your calls on 0487155000. Also taking your text messages on 4001. Thank you very much indeed to all of you. And even to those that are texting and tweeting as well. @DubaiI1038FM, #DubaiI1038. Thanks very much indeed for you, for your text. Thanks to this individual out there. The fan club is obviously in effect. Saying, as a friend of Camilla... what's coming next? I can tell you that she does a lot more hours than she lets on. She's constantly messaging back and answering calls at all times. She's very active on Real Mums of Dubai and is tagged hundreds of times a week. She is the resident expert for everything baby and spends so much time replying to everyone. This woman rocks.
Oh.
Look at that. I'll give you the number afterwards, okay?
I'll pay them later.
thank you very much indeed for that one. Another one from Beth Ward out there. I'm a huge fan of Five Little Ducks. My husband would agree. I love going to the town centre store. The staff are amazing. I can always nip in for my breakfast at the cafe next door. I love malls that are small and easy to navigate and have easy parking. I've got a four-month-old and Camilla and her team have been amazing with all my needs. What's going on this morning? That's from Beth Ward out there this morning. So put her on the list as well.
Yeah. She came in, bought a high chair last week. Lovely Hugo. She let me have a cuddle. I sometimes steal the babies that come in. Do you mind? Like, I'll just pick him up and have a cuddle. I'm like, yeah, go ahead.
And is that important to have that sort of that communication, that understanding, that personal sort of relationship with your mums?
Absolutely. I tell them, look, I'm in the shop at this time. Come in. If you want my opinion on something, then I'll be there and I'll talk you through whatever it is. We have events. So we had some pregnancy events the last couple of weeks and we had brand specialists talking about car safety, sleepy heads and all of that. So, yeah, it's really important. I never want to be sat in an office, behind a laptop. I always want to be in front of the mums and chatting to them and approachable.
Your thoughts coming in, 4001, keep them coming through to us. Louise, I turn to you to talk all things plastic. Plastic, fantastic. It used to be. It's not so fantastic these days, but some fantastic new initiatives. I suppose this one comes out of Waitrose, and it is the big brands that like that need to drive this change.
Yeah, it's something actually that I was meeting with Colette and Matt a while ago from Spinneys, and they were talking about this initiative. All of us going to Spinneys and it drives me insane how many plastic bags they put things in. So I think, you know, this is definitely something that was needed. Now, what they've done is started a rollout in Abu Dhabi for a 12-week trial of charging 24 fills per... It says 4 fills, I think it's 25 fills per plastic bag. Because the UAE as a country consumes 11 billion bags annually, which is insane. Mm. It's insane. I mean... I try and take my own bags to the supermarket. If I forget, we reuse them as like bin bags or something, you know, so it's not like they're completely thrown away. But this initiative I think is fantastic, and they've seen a reduce in number of bags by 74% already in those 5 stores. So that just proves that people are actually sort of paying attention to this. I think it's, you know, again, it's a cultural thing in some countries. When we go back to the UK, I get death stares from the people in Tesco because I always forget my bags. Because we're not used to having to do it, you know. But in the UK, they sigh at you if you don't have a reusable bag with you. So I definitely think that it's a good initiative, and I hope that it sort of rolls out quickly. I think we're a little bit behind the curve here on that. And I can't see any reason why it wouldn't, you know, why it doesn't work.
It is this sort of expectancy, isn't it, Camilla, that we, you know, not just the big chains, you go into the little stores, you go into the little convenience stores, and it's this expectancy that everything needs to go into a bag.
I know, when they put like my can of Diet Coke in a bag, I'm like, don't worry, I've got hands, I'll be all right. And I give it back to them. I shop with Kibson's and they bring a big box, which my kids love to play in. And and then my nanny takes them home to send stuff to the Philippines. So it gets a good usage, good workout. And then I ask them also to put all my fruit and veg in paper bags. Mm. So there's that option on their website. Also, when we go to the organic shop, the organic foods and cafe, they give me a box. There's no bags to be seen. So we're trying to do our bit. What I find frustrating is that I would like to recycle more. We get through a lot of water bottles, and I'm trying to switch to, you know, having my refillable bottle and my metal straws. But where do I recycle, and how can that be made easier for everybody? Because if it was easy, if there was recycling at the school or in every car park or in every supermarket, I think we'd all do it more and have a bit more of a push to do it.
Yeah. So an Chanel, have you changed your ways? Are you getting away from plastic these days?
I think I've always tried to use it as little as possible. Yeah. I do still use a plastic bag. I'm not good enough about taking sort of a canvas tote with me to the supermarket. But I always do that thing where they put two items in one bag. I'm like, no. I'm going to pack this as full as I can and carry this one bag as heavy as possible. I have to say, I'm a little bit surprised by the results that they found, because they're charging only 25 fils or 24 fils per bag and saying that it's a 74% decrease in a single-use bag. Doesn't that surprise you?
It does. I heard that this morning, but it did surprise me. It was so high. But I think people have been waiting for it somehow. And I know they said they only... The story said it's just in these Waitrose stores, but in my local Spinneys, I saw, I didn't have time to look at it, but a yellow box that said take a bag, leave a bag, sort of reuse a bag kind of thing. So I think they are rolling it out quicker than they're saying.
It seems almost like it's more about the awareness than the cost, because it's only going to cost you a dirham for four bags.
Yeah.
But the reusable bags are only 2.5 dirhams.
So just remember that.
I always forget mine. But then I just go, right, give me five of those reusable ones and we start again. So I've got a whole bunch of those, and they're good for like your dry cleaning or whatever. We have them around the house. So I just hate those really plasticky, you know, but I just think about the environment. It's really bad.
It's also the ones that you put your fruit and veg in. So they'll insist on putting one orange in one bag and a lemon in another. And then when I put all of it together, they're like, do you want separate bags? I'm like, no, I put them all together for a purpose.
It's interesting, isn't it, that this has to be trialled. It's like the whole thing with, you know, putting gas into your own car. That, you know, why does that have to be trialled?
That's very different, Tom. Yeah. I'm sorry, I drove away from Adnock last week. I said, no, I'll drive over the Dubai border and service will be resumed as normal. Can't be dealing with that.
And also there's a danger for me associated
with it. I just don't understand when it comes up, you know, with good reason there are trials there. And as you mentioned, the team behind Waitrose are putting it into practice there. But you don't, it sort of amazes me that it's not been done through their other stores as well and their other brands, but there seems to be this expectance that people have things packaged for them.
Yeah, I think from their point of view, it might be, okay, we roll it out completely, people may get upset about it. You know, they've got to protect that
little by little
their brand, yeah. and their business. You know, it's competitive out there. So if it was me, I'd sort of test it, but but quickly.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're, like I said before, I think we're behind the curve as a country for what we're doing. So I'm sure that they will sort of roll it out quickly.
We'll have more from the team in just a few moments' time. We've got to go to the news very quickly. Let's get the latest news headlines. Then we'll come back with more stories for you right here on Dubai Eye 103.8. How to get in touch with the show? You text us on 4001, you give us a call on 0487155500, or you have your say online at DubaiEye1038FM, hashtag DubaiEye1038. It is a Sunday morning into the second hour of the show. All the latest from the ARN news team as they monitor the rescue relief effort down in Thailand. And we've got sport for you a little later on as well. Busy day for sports fans out there. No World Cup live action today, but Wimbledon, Formula One Grand Prix, international cricket. Plenty to look forward to with Robbie Greenfield just after 1:30. In the meantime, though, I am in conversation with Louise Karim, the Managing Director of Mums at Work, and Camilla Hassan, Founder and Managing Director of Five Little Ducks. Sanaa Rabbani is in studio with us as well as we work through some of the big stories that you're waking up to and have been discussing over the weekend. Thanks for your text messages. Lots coming in. 4001. This one's from Ryan out there. Good morning to you, Ryan. Saying, I went to Toy Store and they were charging 50 fils per bag. I said, thank you for reminding me, and I declined. I love the concept. Thanks for that one, Ryan. And thanks to Randall as well. Randall's been in touch on the Thai boys trapped in the cave. Firstly, I wish them Godspeed in the extraction. And secondly, I think it's an opportunity to explore the use of technology to prevent recurrence and enhance recovery efforts. Thank you for that one, Randall. Yes, we're watching on with interest and monitoring that story for you all day long. As I mentioned, we've got our paper reviewers with us for a little longer, and we'll turn to them now for their stories of the weekend, because it's an interesting weekend. We had all sorts of dramas, none more so than the weather, Camilla, because we were warned on Thursday evening there might be a bit of intemperate weather. There were certain parts of the city I don't think expected quite the weather they got at certain parts.
Well, it's funny because we get about 3 days of rain a year in Dubai. I've been here 10 years. I've never seen anything like this because we got this, you know, some rain in July. So it's very British to talk about the weather, but this was quite shocking, I think, all round. And yeah, I mean, there was wind, sandstorms. There was a huge downpour in Merdif area. So, yeah, it was pretty shocking.
It seemed to be very secluded, this one. Because I was talking to other people around the city because we got hit by it where I stay towards the Merdif area, and we were very much affected by it, and extraordinary, and you know, all the kids were out and it was like, wow, where is this coming? We had flamingos, not real flamingos, but sort of inflatable flamingos floating past us, past the kitchen window, etc. A couple of trees down as well. It was very dramatic. It was a great talking point. And you know, we were texting everyone and sending a few photos to mates, and they were like, what are you talking about? It's beautiful where we are at the moment. A bit overcast.
I think down this end of town, like Media City area, it was overcast, and obviously the visibility was pretty poor, but the rain was mostly over the other side.
Certainly, if you were affected by this one, we'd love to hear your thoughts. A lot of people affected, a lot of pictures, but also accidents. I mean, over 200 accidents or something like that?
I know, it's terrible. Every time we have sort of weather issues like this, when it affects visibility, I think we always have, you know, car accidents. So it's really important to be safe on the roads. I didn't want to leave the house. Mm. Obviously, my husband went to watch football, but that's another matter. But yeah, it was pretty scary, pretty hairy on, I think, Friday evening. I was planning to go to the beach, but that didn't happen. So,
yeah, and that was that prompted another warning as well from the authorities and the emergency services, because a lot of people are heading to the beaches over the weekend as well, regardless of the weather, which it just doesn't make sense, because obviously if you have that sort of weather inland, the weather out at sea, and we had adverse sea conditions over the weekend, you shouldn't really be swimming in that.
It's not going to be pleasant, is it?
No.
Or sensible.
It's just, I mean, it was dramatic, to say the least, and it was interesting, as you mentioned, in July as well. And I suppose that's indicative of the fact that you can't predict anything at the moment. I mean, here we are, we're the three bits around the table talking about weather conditions here in the UAE. When we look back at the United Kingdom, and they've had, what, 5 weeks of glorious, outrageous, yeah, glorious weather throughout the summer, which is unheard of.
I find it funny, though, when all the English people are complaining about a heat wave, 25 degrees. You're like, come out here, love. Have a week in Dubai.
There's no AC, though, is there? So it is hard to sleep in the UK when there's...
And a bus sank into the tarmac, apparently. There's pictures on. I'm like, yeah, bus went into the tarmac because it melted. So, but yeah, the whole country there grinds to a halt.
I had a wonderful one. I was on the Heathrow Express the other day, coming from, and it was warm. It was warm. And he had that classic sort of announcement over the loud tonneau that you can't really understand, but it sort of gets across saying, apologies to everybody in these adverse weather conditions. The air conditioning on the train has broken down. So therefore, please move to another carriage.
If it's
broken down, then what's the point, you know?
Open the windows, you'll be
open
right.
The windows, yeah, the old school. So, yeah, did you get affected by the weather over the weekend, the adverse weather conditions? Kudos to the emergency authorities for their response times. Total of 252 traffic accidents reported and adhered to by Dubai Police and the other emergency services. And I can certainly attest to the clearing of roads, because there were some hairy incidents down towards where we were, specifically with building construction areas, you know, and the sheeting that is around those that got picked up by the wind and moved and across roads. A number of cars have basically moved across, and the police were down there on the spot closing off any dangerous areas. So if you were affected by it in any way, if you've got any pictures that you can share with us, please do that. Louise, let's move to you if we can, because these HR laws, I know we touched on it a little earlier on, but the human resource laws, again, I suppose, clear indication of this move towards flexibility. Is that a good way to read it or not?
Yeah, I mean, as we mentioned before, you know, it's for government employees at the moment, but it does seem like a sort of a very progressive move for them, which is great for the UAE. It's great for not only women, but, you know, lots of different pockets of society that need a little bit of flexibility. But also, you know, when studies show that millennials, they refuse to sit at their desks from 9 to 5, you know, they're not going to, or Generation next one, they're not going to want to sit in the office at that time. So if you, again, coming back to, if you want really talented people in your organization, you're going to have to start thinking a little bit differently. And I think the government have probably seen, you know, that they need to move in that way. In other countries, like I said before, in the UK, it's quite common to have flexibility in most businesses. And then you look at big companies like EY, PwC. PwC announced just the other day that they were removing all desk phones from their offices, which again shows you that people are not located necessarily in the office. And I read something else that by 2030, they believe that many companies, you know, will have a very small head office base because people will just be scattered around and be mobile to work wherever needed.
I mean, the whole idea, I mean, it's gone into our sort of everyday lexicon, isn't it? 9 to 5, what do you do? What do you do 9 to 5? Well, my 9 to 5 is that I'm a broadcaster or whatever. But it's a sort of throwback to an old age, isn't it? Do we really need... I think I read somewhere that the sort of 9 to 5 working hour was worked out as the optimum amount of time that you could achieve based on the sort of factory output model that came through in the first industrial revolution.
Yeah, it's so outdated, yeah. You know. There's so many studies that say, you know, you're not productive over the 8 hours if you sat there for 8 hours. I heard one the other day, I think it was on the radio actually, saying if you're over 40, you should only work 25 hours a week. So I'm loving that one.
Yeah, I love that.
I think, you know, that people, with technology, with the way, you know, the world is, people need to rethink how to manage their employees, because I think that's the difficult thing. People are scared to do it because they don't see them. They don't see them sat there at their desk. But what are they doing while they're sat there at their desk? You don't know what they're doing. You need to manage on deliverables and on output. And until people can get their head around that, you know, I don't think they're going to have productive businesses.
I suppose it's also, Camilla, a trust thing, isn't it? Because as long as you trust those that you are employing and trust your staff, then you're going to have this wonderful working environment when things get done.
Absolutely. I mean, see, for me, I'm kind of torn on this, because when I'm in the office and I have, you know, my finance manager there, and we've got, you know, various, you know, other people in the head office, I can walk over to the desk, ask a question, it gets answered straight away. Sometimes when I'm, you know, we do a lot of work on WhatsApp because people are out and about in the shops and everything. And, you know, if you don't get an answer straight away, you're kind of sitting there drumming your fingers going, well, I can't do that until I get the answer to that and all the rest of it. So
they haven't even looked at the message yet.
Yeah. Oh, there's no ticks.
It's just one tick.
Yeah. So, you know, for me, it's a question of, you know, because our tempo is so fast, I need to get immediate answers to things. But like I said, you know, then we are on WhatsApp a lot, and we, you know, send pictures to each other. Okay, we need more of this. Okay, this is doing well. We've got this customer, blah, blah, blah. So it does help us. There, you know, there is a trust issue as well. You know, are people actually doing what they need to do? And the other thing that I would say is that before I got my office here a few months ago, I was working out of coffee shops, and I can't tell you how few coffee shops there were which had good Wi-Fi, conducive working environment, power sockets, quiet, and, you know, without millions of screaming kids. Love my kids, but when I'm working, you know, it's difficult. So for me, trying to work remotely was really challenging, and trying to find somewhere where I could actually plug in, get my head down, and do work. So I think if we can have these sort of business hubs or areas around town where people can actually go, because sometimes it's not practical to work from home. You know, I can't work from home because my kids will be in every 5 minutes wanting to watch, you know, something on my laptop.
Yeah.
So I can't necessarily work from home. So how are we going to set this up? How do we execute this whole flexible working environment? Yeah. You know what I mean?
I think I feel a little bit differently from that, because I actually used to, in a previous job, take a day off every now and then so that I could focus more and be more productive, because you have that whole culture in the workplace of nonstop meetings. So I'd be in meetings from 9 to 5 and then have to do all of my work afterwards and only get sort of, you know, however much time done and actually producing things. So I think that sort of meeting place, or that meeting culture in the workplace that you get, I think having flexible work hours allows you to sort of take some space from that, which is a good thing.
I think for me, flexible working is different things. So, you know, I don't particularly work from home apart from in the evenings. But I leave the office at 3 or 4 o'clock to go and spend some time with my kids. So I choose what time I work. So it's not necessarily that I want to work from home or work from a co-working space or anything like that, because I do agree that it's good to be around the team. You know, I can work from wherever I want, but I want to be around the team. I want to ask questions. I also, we have a really nice culture in the office, you know, so it's actually enjoyable. But just like Sonali said, that sometimes I need some space to think, to write some copy, to write a report, whatever it is. So sometimes I just need to go somewhere else. And where is that somewhere else? That's the thing. Is it a co-working space?
I just close my office door, put my headphones on, say, right, I'm not here.
I don't have an office door. We're open.
How does it work for you guys? Do share your thoughts with us on what works for you when it comes to office space, workspace, and work hours. We have got time just to squeeze in a couple more stories from Camilla and Louise before we bid adieu to them. We've got sport coming your way in just a few moments' time, but we'll deal with the Sharjah Rain Room, and we'll deal with business setups and a few more of the stories and comments that have come through in just a few moments' time.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it. On The Agenda with Tom Urquhart, only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Right, we are. What's going on over the summer? Plenty going on over the summer. In fact, we down here at Dubai Eye 103.8 would like to give you 90 ways to spend your summer, from relaxing and lightning staycations to wild water sports, shopping in London, exclusive dining and grand adventures abroad. We've got a summer pack full of stories waiting to be lived and retold. How do you do that? Visit Jumeirah.com /90ways, promising an evening of sheer luxury. A romantic moonlight swim leads you and your loved ones to your own infinity pool, adorned with floating rose petals, sweeping views of Dubai and the Arabian Gulf, serving as the only backdrop. That's just one of the 90 ways to spend your summer. 7,321 dirhams per couple. That's the Burj Al Arab Jumeirah. One of the ways that you can spend your summer with Jumeirah. Keep it locked to Dubai Eye 103.8 FM to find out more, and of course all the team at Drive Live, who've teamed up with the team at Jumeirah to help promote this over the summer. Talking of the summer, what are you up to over the summer? Are you looking for ways to entertain your children? Are you looking for ways to entertain yourselves? Are you looking for other bits and pieces to do out and about? Well, Camilla's got a suggestion for you. The Sharjah Rain Room, you like it down there, don't you?
Well, we went yesterday, and it was with the greatest of irony after our day of rain on Friday that we spent money to go and get rained on yesterday. But it was, my kids have been born here, so they've never actually been in torrential rain. They've never actually experienced this. But basically, it's at the Sharjah Art Foundation, which is down on the Sharjah Corniche. It's great value because it's only 25 dirhams per adult, and children under six are free. And you have to book a slot. So on their website, there are slots, and you just book yourself in, and then off you go. And it's a huge room with essentially a giant sprinkler system in the ceiling. And it's quite clever because if you walk slowly, the rain will stop, so you don't get wet. But if you run, you will get wet. And obviously my kids were the latter. So do bring a change of clothes and or a towel, because we came out absolutely soaked.
See, there's the selling point. When they got funding for this and financing, somebody went around and sat at a boardroom table and said, we've got this idea, we've got a room, and you're just going to get rained on. And it's a hard sell, but it works, because the number of people I've heard that have been there and loved it.
Packed out. It was really hard to get slots, actually. And it's like an art installation in a way. And I thought it was just going to be limited, but it's actually going to be there year round. And it looks like quite an expensive thing to install, because it's pretty big. They only let six people in at a time. So you do get that personal, feel. It's not packed or anything. Great pictures for Instagram. I mean, it's straight on there. The kids absolutely loved it. And, my kids are 5 and 4, so they're just enjoyed running around in the rain.
And Louise, I suppose this is, just one of those sort of things that we need to be conscious of going into the summer months, specifically those that are going to be spending time here over the summer, those that aren't able to get away for the entirety of the summer, which seems to my mind to be a lot more of us at the moment are spending more and more time here, and having a number of ways to be able to sort of entertain the children, especially if they're young.
Yeah, it's a definite need. Yeah. There's lots out there, just as we were talking about before, though, it's quite expensive sometimes, so you need to look around for deals or great initiatives like the Sharjah Rain Room that's not that expensive. But we are seeing a lot more women, especially, that used to travel for the whole 10 weeks, but they're not doing it anymore.
And maybe that's got to do with, a lot of people will look at it and say it's got to do with the current economics situations. But I think it's also got to do with the fact that a lot more of us are invested here in terms of our businesses, in terms of what we do, in terms of the whole idea of sort of the contract days are sort of gone. A lot of people have set up their own little initiatives, be it their first means of income or otherwise as well, here in the region. Therefore, you need to be here.
Yeah, for that reason, definitely. Like you said, the two-year contracts, the disappear. People kind of come for 2-3 years or they're here long term. You know, just like Camilla, I've been here 10 years as well. It's kind of, you're there in the long haul now. And I think you're right, that mentality, and people probably have houses here, maybe not houses in their home country. So what they're going to do for 10 weeks, you know, sleep, get out of a suitcase, which is obviously difficult with two kids. So I think that's a trend too.
And I suppose, Camilla, just look at it from your perspective as well, as a business owner here in the region. I mean, we're talking there about flexi hours, weren't we, a minute ago and everything, which is all good and well, and you can do a lot of it from a laptop over in the south of France, but you need to be hands-on as well.
No, 100%. I don't, especially at this stage of the business, we're so new, I don't think I could abandon ship, you know, for a couple of weeks or a month or anything like that. So now I'm here all summer, but I actually like the summer in Dubai. Yeah. I've been here every summer. I've never shipped off anywhere. Am I missing out? I don't know, but I quite like it. The roads are quiet. Yep. There's always good deals on. There's a massive slide in Mercato that's free. Get down there. We went down it about 6 times yesterday. Brilliant. They've converted an escalator into a giant slide with a ball pool. Yeah, parents can go on as well, so it's not just for the kids. So yeah, there's lots going on. I don't feel it's you know, it's obviously really hot, but you know, get in the pool. It's all good.
Make the most of it. Just a time to squeeze one final little word in from Louise here, because I just want to lead on to another story briefly that I suppose follows on from what we're talking about here, the whole idea of setting up businesses, because a lot of people have been encouraged to set up businesses during their time here in the UAE. A lot of people do set up businesses as they see their time in the UAE as an opportunity to fulfill their dreams and further their ambitions as well. Again, going back to the comments that have been coming through from Ministry of Economy and elsewhere, executive boards, the whole process of setup, are they looking to streamline that a little bit?
Yeah, so there was an article that was published this weekend that basically you can now set up a business in just 15 minutes with the TRA. So basically they're putting a lot more online. So everything from opening a bank account, telephone lines, mobile lines, visas and licenses for UAE residents. Now they're trialing it in Ajman and Ras Al Khaimah. But the whole idea is to increase the UAE's competitiveness in becoming an area for small businesses and entrepreneurs. And I think it's a great initiative to see, you know, that coupled with things like the new visa that you can get out of Media City for 7,500. So there's lots of different initiatives that the government are setting up to help people thrive in building a business here. And I know from our community, we get a lot of ladies that can't find the flexible roles that they want. So they're very interested in creating their own flexible world. So we support them on that as well. And I think the whole setup scares a lot of people off because it's quite complex. So the more initiatives they can put into place to simplify that, I think that's all great.
The red tape, isn't it? Mm. That's always been a problem around the world. And trying to reduce that red tape is obviously one way that's going to make things more beneficial. Listen, we're running out of time. We're going to go to the news desk now. It just remains for me to say a big thank you to our two special guests here in studio. Louise Karim is the Managing Director of Mums at Work. Louise, bless you. Thanks so much indeed for your time. If people want to find out more about what you do and all the team at Mums at Work, best way to find out?
Yeah, www.mumsatwork.ae or follow us on social media, mumsatwork.me.
Really appreciate your time this morning. Thank you so much for that. And Camilla, thank you to you as well. Camilla Hassan is the Founder and Managing Director of Five Little Ducks here in the region. If people want to find out more?
We have our Instagram, Five Little Ducks Me, and our website is just under construction, or come and see me in store.
Got to tell me about the name. Where did the name come from?
We just thought it was cute and fun. And we've got this huge stand of rubber ducks. And I swear, every time a child comes in, they pick up about 6 and the mum has to buy them. So it commercially makes sense as well. So
5,000 little ducks and growing. Right too. Thank you so much indeed for your time this morning. More from Sunil and myself in just a few moments' time. We've got Robbie Greenfield in the green room as well. Greenfield in the green room.
It's time to have your say. The Agenda with Tom Urquhart on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Thanks so much indeed. Flexible working is for sales, designers, etc. Not for everyone, not for cashiers or broadcasters. Thank you very much indeed. That's Sholpon being in touch with the show and sharing thoughts on a variety of subjects. Now, one of the subjects that has obviously caught the imagination in recent weeks is the FIFA World Cup. We keep banging on about the fact that this is a World Cup of surprises, it's a World Cup of drama. But do you know what? It continues to deliver because a little late last night into the early hours of this morning, this happened.
Cheryshev, Juba, Cheryshev's not stopped. Denis Cheryshev, oh my word! That is quite something! The boy's a star! One glorious, glorious goal on one glorious Russian night! Here's Mandzukic. It's in! It's Kramaric! It's 1-1. Andrei Kramaric claws Croatia level again. Strinic. And Kramaric. Akinfeev struggling. And Perisic hit the inside of the post. And so those two first half goals remain the only goals. And extra time follows. Modric with the corner. Fina with the header and Croatia with the lead. Domagoj Vida got big and Russia have a free kick. Chekhov takes Fernandez. Russia will not retreat. Astonishing. He dragged it to penalties. Now he must convert one. Fernandez has dragged it horribly wide, which leaves Ivan Rakitic with the opportunity to strike the telling blow to end the Russian carnival. Rakitic! And Russia dissolved into tears! But it is Croatia 4-3 on penalties.
Robbie Greenfield watched on with interest. One word, I suppose, summed up there. Astonishing.
It really was, wasn't it? No one expected Russia to get to the quarterfinals. No one expected them to give Croatia the game that they gave them. And it was incredible drama. It really was. Russia have been a credit to the World Cup. They've done a great job as host. They've kept things fun and lighthearted away from the pitch. And the team has performed on it. And coming into the tournament ranked 70th, they had that opening day 5-0 win, didn't they, over Saudi Arabia? That feels like about 9 months ago now. It was actually about 3 weeks ago, but yeah. They've just continued to play well, and they negotiated the group. They got past Spain in the round of 16, and they were within a kick. Mario Fernandez, having dragged them, as the commentator said, into that penalty shootout with a beautiful header in the 115th minute, he was the villain from the spot. It was an awful spot kick, but the pressure must have just got to them. It was unbearable. It was horrible watching it. I can't imagine what it was like having to take those penalties. But credit to Ivan Rakitic, the Barcelona midfielder, who stepped up, cool as you like. And I hope the England match doesn't go to penalties with Croatia, because those boys can take a penalty.
Oh, it's extraordinary drama. I mean, talk about the drama of football. I mean, to finish at full-time 1-1, to then finish after extra time at 2-2, to then go to penalties as well. And I must say, I mean, I think that first Russia goal, I'm not even going to attempt to tell you who scored it.
Cheryshev.
There we are. it's got to be up there as goal of the tournament. It was absolutely amazing strike.
I think Benjamin Pavard is, for me, the goal of the tournament. The goal he scored against Argentina. However, that ran it very close. There have been some incredible long-range goals in this tournament. It really has. It's had everything. And I think we've been banging on about how great it's been. It has been a breath of fresh air for football. Because World Cups has always come with a huge amount of hype. They're always bigger than the event themselves, but very seldom do they actually live up to the hype that we generate around them. And I think this one genuinely has.
Senel Rapani is alongside us as well, who I'm sure watched on with interest, or certainly looked at the results this morning with interest. I didn't think at the beginning of this tournament, I said outright that I would not be supporting Russia. I was not going to be a Russian fan throughout the tournament. I ended up becoming one last night.
Yeah, I mean, who are you cheering for, Sonal? She looks a little alarmed. I didn't watch the match.
I watched on Friday. I didn't watch yesterday.
Okay.
Are you a one day, one off, one day on, one day off?
I kind of OD
now.
A little bit.
Did you not feel the sort of the reverberations of Russian fans screaming around the city last night? I didn't realize there were so many Russian fans.
Honestly, I think there needs to be a new census because they have absolutely swamped the venues in this city. We've had them down at the Bridgewater Tavern. I think the Emirates Golf Club venue has been a firm favorite as well. It's literally packed to the rafters. So
extraordinary.
It's a shame. It's the balloon has been burst now, hasn't it? I guess. Different to Brazil going out in the semi-final last time around in shocking circumstances and in a capitulation that I don't think has ever been rivaled in world football. I think Russian fans will take a lot of heart in the fact that I don't think in their heart of hearts that any of them expected a team ranked 70th who hadn't been great in the build-up to this World Cup to ever reach the last eight and then give Croatia, who've emerged as one of the tournament favourites, a real go in the quarterfinal.
They're into the semi-finals, Croatia that is. Who will they face in that semi-final? Well, it was the winner of this game.
Welcome to the quarterfinal of the World Cup of 2018. This is Sweden versus England. He looks to his right, he looks to his left, he plays it for Harry Kane, shot! It's the most exciting moment of the game so far, but for one time the prolific Englishman can't find the mark. Who's on the end of it? England are on the end of it! And it is Maguire! Harry Maguire's first international goal! It's another set piece which comes off for Gareth Southgate's team! Right on half an hour! This is long and this is onside for Sterling, takes it down, pass to keeper, still Sterling, and still may have to late off for Kane, Sterling. Oh, what an opportunity there for the Manchester City striker. Sweden dominating at the start of the half, and here will be a header and a brilliant save. Berg still can't find the net, super save from Pickford though. Oh, it's into a useful area here, it's into a very good area, it was onto the head of Dele. The ball is into the Sweden net. England may be going into the semi-finals of the World Cup. That's a lovely silky dribble. And the ball is into the danger area. Touch back in. Brilliant save first time. And again, Pickford has come to England's rescue. And here is a big opportunity for them. It is Guidetti. He'll pull it across in here. Controlled, and Pickford to the rescue yet again for England. Berg cannot believe it. England are through to the semi-finals of the World Cup. They will play Russia or Croatia in Moscow.
They'll play Croatia in Moscow on Wednesday evening at 10 o'clock local time here in the UAE. Quite nice from an England fan's perspective, Robbie Greenfield, to not be biting your fingernails after 90 minutes.
It was serene, wasn't it? It was completely stress-free for the most part. Sweden had a bit of a spell at the start of the second half where you just felt that England needed to be careful not to take their foot off the gas, but they controlled the game from the off. They had double the number of passes. They had an 80% completion rate on their passes. They had far more possession. I think the stat was about 58% in favour of England. So all the key areas of the game they were in total control of. And yes, Jordan Pickford was required to make a couple of great saves, but you just never really felt that Sweden were in that match, which for a World Cup quarter-final involving England, and I've not seen too many in my lifetime because we haven't made that many. I think the last one we made was back in 2006, which was a penalty shootout loss to Portugal. But it was very, very... It was impressive. I was very impressed by their performance, and you fancy they're going to have to play a lot better against Croatia than they had to play against Sweden.
Can they beat Croatia?
Yes, why not? Yeah, they can. They really can. I didn't think Croatia were excellent yesterday against Russia. They looked vulnerable at the back. They let in a fantastic... You can't really legislate for Cheryshev's goal because it was brilliant. But England have been so good at set pieces, and Russia got them on a set piece, didn't they, to equalise on the 115th minute. So it depends what Croatia turn up. If the occasion... And I think it will depend how either team copes with the pressure of the moment of playing in a World Cup semi-final. It's England's first since 1990. It's Croatia's first since 1998 when Davor Zucker was the talisman of that team over in France. They had a fantastic team back then as well. I think they've got the stronger players top to bottom, Croatia. I think they've got the better players on the ball. Luka Modric is a wizard. We know that. You know, Rakitic, again, he's a fantastic player who's so influential for Barcelona now. They've got Mandzukic up front. So they've got the star players. England are, for once in a World Cup, actually greater than the collective sum of their parts. That they've so often had good individuals but haven't gelled as a team. This time around, they haven't had those good individuals. Harry Kane and Dele Alli are world-class players, you might argue, but they haven't had the stardust of years gone by, the Lampards, the Gerrards, the Rooneys. But this time around, Gareth Southgate, huge props to him, huge credit to the England manager, and I don't think anyone expected him to evolve into such a great leader as he has done. He's been brilliant, and the papers are fawning over him back home, and rightly so, because not only has he organised this team and inspired them to play their best football, he's actually done it in a manner which is great to see as well. He's been magnanimous in defeat, in victory as well, and he's been the first to go and commiserate with the players that are on the losing side, the Swedes yesterday, the Colombians in the round of 16. He's been a credit to this World Cup, Gareth Southgate.
The two semi-finals will take place on Tuesday and Wednesday, respectively, both kicking off at 10 o'clock. All the latest in the build-up to that one, courtesy of Dubai Eye Sports team, at Dubai Eye Sport, or of course keep it locked here on Dubai Eye 103.8. There's plenty of other sport for Robbie, myself and the rest of the team to get to in just a few moments' time, so stay tuned as we deal with Wimbledon, the Formula One Grand Prix, international cricket and cricket and the Tour de France coming your way between now and the end of play.
It's time to have your say. The Agenda with Tom Urquhart on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Just before we move on to other sports, just a quick line about our friend Farah the Falcon, the feathered forecaster from 32 nations competing for World Cup glory to just four. We've reached the semi-final stage over in Russia, which means the pressure is ramping up on our predatory pundit, Farah the Falcon. You can watch all of her predictions on your YouTube channel at Dubai Eye Sport or across our social media at Dubai Eye 103.8 FM and at Dubai Eye Sport in association with Emirates Golf Club, Football Central, Emirates Golf Club, ultimate fan zone to catch all of the action. Robbie Greenfield in the studio with Sonal and myself. And
she's a faltering Falcon, I'm afraid.
You can't say that. She's still got four games. You know, she can redeem herself.
She can.
She can redeem herself.
She can, yes.
It's been a tough one to call, even for human pundits, let alone the feathered
ones. I don't
even
think Paul the Octopus or Nostradamus himself would have been able to call some of these results. She can't be too hard on herself.
They're on a barbecue somewhere in Lisbon at the moment. Don't worry about that. Right, let's go to Wimbledon because interesting day of play yesterday. Novak Djokovic was in action and causing a bit of controversy. He says he felt driven to react to certain fans on centre court during his third round win over Britain's Kyle Edmund at Wimbledon. He was booed after receiving a time violation for bouncing the ball too many times before serving. Later, he cupped a hand to his ear in the direction of where he felt he was being abused most.
There is a certain, so to say, unwritten borderline where you just feel that it's a bit too much. Okay, I was bouncing the ball, I got my time violation, no doubt about it, I deserved it, but I didn't deserve to be treated as I was treated by certain individuals, and that's one thing that I didn't like.
It's just not tennis, Robbie Greenfield, but I suppose for Novak fans, it shows that he's got a bit of his bite back, hasn't he?
He definitely has. He's been getting it. The last couple of months, I've been watching him improve with almost every game that he's played, and he's getting his bulletproof mental game back. I think that's what always set him apart. And he has been low on confidence these last 12 months because of everything that's been going on, the injury, the loss of form and all that kind of thing. He's slowly but surely getting his best form back. And I'm kind of on his side with this one. I think the crowd were a little bit, and it's not really the kind of behaviour you would associate with the Wimbledon tennis aficionados, Tom, is it?
Because when they're playing a Brit.
Yeah, well, you know, I think he's a three-time champion. It's a bit disrespectful to Novak. And I think there's a large sway of people who aren't huge fans of Novak Djokovic. I actually like him a lot. I don't know why he's unpopular in some quarters, but he had to come through a huge partisan crowd supporting Kyle Edmund, and Kyle Edmund played well. But Djokovic is really getting his game back and ultimately ended up a pretty routine winner in the end. He lost the first set, came back, won the next three, 6-3, 6-2, 6-4. So I actually think he could be a big, big danger this year. Roger Federer is protected in that top half of the draw. That all the danger men are in the bottom half. You've got Juan Martín Del Potro, Rafa Nadal, and Novak Djokovic in that bottom half of the draw, playing the fourth round on Monday, heading for a collision course. Roger Federer has a pretty straightforward route all the way through to the final, so he's the man to beat. But he has beaten Novak has beaten Roger twice in Wimbledon finals not so long ago. So if that is the final, that promises to be an absorbing match.
A couple of seeds have fallen in the men's division. Carl Edmund going out yesterday to Novak Djokovic. But nothing compared to the women's division, where a number of the top seeds have fallen, including the top seed. Simona Halep called herself unprofessional for failing to focus during her shock third round defeat at Wimbledon yesterday.
I feel that she has a chance to win it, definitely. But also I see many other players that they have the chance to win it. So it depends of the day, depends of the power, the feelings, and everyone can do it.
She's going on holiday. That was her saying that Serena Williams can win her eighth singles title at the All England Club. Well, she definitely can now, because there's no Simona Halep.
There's no Simona Halep. There's no Garbiñe Muguruza. Karolina Pliskova, in fact, is the only seed of the top 10 seeds left in the draw. So she's playing Kiki Bertens in the next round. She's in the same half of the draw as Serena Williams. Serena Williams won't meet a seed, Tom, now until the semifinals. It's quite extraordinary. Mm. The quarterfinal, she's got two unseeded opponents. She's playing Rodina in the fourth round. Georgie plays Makarova in the other match, and the winner of that will play Serena Williams if she does beat Rodina. And she's got an unimpeded route through to the semifinals where she might face Pliskova. But then again, with so many shocks going on, I wouldn't be surprised if Pliskova was knocked out before that. The top half of the draw is interesting. Angelique Kerber and Yelena Ostapenko are the two top seeds left in, 11th and 12th in the seedings. It's been carnage in the women's draw. We're used to seeing shocks in women's tennis. It's very unpredictable. We're used to seeing that the major honours fought for by up to 10, 12 players, especially since after Serena's absence from the circuit. Now she's come back. It's a very interesting dynamic because she's obviously not on her top form. She's lacking match fitness. She had to pull out of Roland Garros with a shoulder injury against, she didn't get to play her in the end, but Maria Sharapova, who was also one of the early casualties in this draw. And now it is wide open. Anyone could win it. Angelique Kerber's a two-time Grand Slam champion. Yelena Ostapenko won the French Open last year. She hits the ball very hard. She's clearly playing well. She's a very dangerous opponent in that top half of the draw. But Serena Williams has a fantastic opportunity as the 25th seed to win an eighth Wimbledon title. And I think that would draw her level on 24 with Margaret Court as well. Which is extraordinary if she's able to do it.
There's no tennis today. It's Middle Sunday. And because the weather's so good over in the UK at the moment, they haven't lost any play, so they've got the day off. So no play on Middle Sunday at Wimbledon. So it means we've got no tennis today. We've got no World Cup football today. What on earth are we going to do with ourselves, Robbie Greenfield?
We've got the small matter of the British Grand Prix.
Okay, we'll do that then.
I think UK fans are spoiled at the moment for sport, aren't they? The British Grand Prix promises to be an absolute thriller if qualifying is anything to go by. Lewis Hamilton saved his best lap till last, and he was able to pip Sebastian Vettel for pole. Kimi Raikkonen took third spot. Lewis Hamilton put in a tremendous lap. He said it was one of the best qualifying laps he's ever driven. I think that's six poles now at Silverstone. He's been dominant there over the years, but there's a real challenge this time around from Ferrari and Sebastian Vettel. He leads the championship by 1 point. They've both won three times this season. Hamilton's got the upper hand at his home circuit, but I tell you what, it's not going to be easy, and that one will be a cracker, I think.
5 o'clock, 6 o'clock?
I believe so, 5 o'clock, I think.
I think it's five or six this evening, so make sure you've got that one locked in. For cricket fans, you're well catered for from...
5.10.
5.10.
5.10 local time.
Good.
Gets underway. Just to clarify.
That's a really 5:10, good thing.
A really weird timing.
Well done,
huh?
Silverstone. Let's just go for that. Just add 10 minutes on, just in case. Australia against Pakistan gets underway over in Harare in about 3 minutes' time. That one gets underway at midday here. And then England against India. That one's been played out in Bristol. It's not... these are T20 matches as well. It's not a day-nighter. So that one gets underway at 5 o'clock this afternoon down in Bristol. Make sure you enjoy that one. There's golf over in Ireland, is that right?
Yep, the final round of... of the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open is taking place over at Ballyliffin Golf Club. Fantastic spot. I was there last week. I've been banging on about that for the last few days. And the two unheralded players at the top of the leaderboard, Erik van Rooyen is leading. I wonder if he's going to be showing the composure to close this one out. He's got a four-shot lead, 14 under par. Ryan Fox, the son of Grant Fox, the legendary All Black, who's I think still the top point scorer in a single World Cup. If I'm is he still the record holder? You'd know more than me, but Ryan Fox has clearly got good sporting genes in his family. He's sharing a tie for second place with Joachim Lagergren. Good to see Danny Willett finding a bit of form, the Masters champion from 2016. He's at 9 under par. Russell Knox is at 8 under. Lee Westwood is in a group on 7 under. And Rory McIlroy all the way back down the leaderboard at 1 under par.
Stage 2 of the Tour de France also gets underway very, very shortly. It wasn't a good day for Chris Froome yesterday. He had a nasty crash on the opening stage of the Tour, which has put a dent in his quest to win a record-equalling fifth title. Starts with a scare. Also a bad day for Mark Cavendish, but he's looking to bounce back on another sprint finish on Stage 2 of the Tour later on this afternoon. Keep it locked here on Dubai I-103.8 to find out all the latest on all of those big sports stories and much, much more. If people want to get in touch with you, Rob, and the rest of the sports team, best way?
Just follow us on @DubaiiSport, Twitter and Instagram.
Thanks very much indeed for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Enjoy your sporting weekend. Are you down at the Bridgie tonight?
We're down at the Bridgie, yeah. We're there all for the rest of the week up until the World Cup final. So we'll be broadcasting the World Cup final live from, I think it is 7 p.m. On Sunday, and we'll also be there for the semi-final action as well, prior to the semi-final action taking place. 10 p.m. those games kick off, so we're going to be broadcasting at our regular time between 7 and 9 on Dubai 103.8.
Thanks very much indeed for that one. That's Robbie Greenfield. Thanks very much indeed to you, Sonal Rapani, for all your hard work today.
Thank you. See you tomorrow.
Thanks to Schroots and, of course, Milani Backerhouse. And Zach, thank you very much indeed for you as well for your presence in the studio today.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.